Good morning. We spent the past few weeks discussing the chiyuvim of an arev, different various exceptions to arevus. Today we're going to deal with the nuts and bolts of arevus, what how to become an arev, what language needs to be done, and just in practice, how to collect from an arev, how to deal with it halacha l'maisa. So as we discussed at length, there are two basic kinds of arevim. An Arev Stam and an Arev Kavlan. An Arev Stam, a regular guarantor, the borrower has primary liability. The creditor first has to try to collect from the borrower, and only after a default, only when he's clear that he cannot get the money from the borrower, does he have the right to approach the guarantor, the Arev, and to demand payment. Now the halacha is it's not enough that there's just a simple default. In a typical case where you have a borrower, he's supposed to be making payments, he misses a payment, you send him a letter, you call him up, nothing doing, that is not enough to go after an Arev Stam. The halacha is you actually have to sue the loyvo, you have to bring him to Beis Din. You have to be mashbia him, he has to give over whatever assets he has to use to satisfy the debt. And then when he has nothing left, he has to make a shvua that he has no other assets. At that point, where Beis Din verified that he doesn't have anything to pay with, at that point, and only then, does the liability of the Arev kick in, and can you go after the guarantor. Now, obviously, this is not very favorable to the lender, to the creditor. If he wants to be able to go after the Arev quickly and easily, he should demand that he be an Arev Kavlan. But if he doesn't, if it ends up being an Arev Stam, you first have to go through the entire process with the borrower before you can go after the Arev. Now, there is one exception. If the borrower has assets in the Medinas Hayom, he has it in a foreign country, he bought some real estate in Europe, so in that case, even though we know he has assets, the Beis Yosef brings down from a Rajva, we cannot tell the creditor to be Moitzi Masayim Almana, to go spend $200 to fly to Europe and try to seize the property and sell it, when it's going to cost him more than the chayv is worth. So in that case, even though the loiva has assets, we can go directly after the arev because those assets are not available to the lender, and it's not feasible to tell him to go overseas.
Does it have to fit that profile? Let's say he could definitely be Moitzi Lois and more recover his expenses. It's just exceptionally,
So the Aruch HaShulchan says hakol lufi rois eni hadayin, that it does depend on the case. If it can be done with a reasonable amount of time and effort, then you're responsible to do it. It's hard to give clear gedarim because there really aren't clear gedarim. Certainly going after a borrower, bringing him to Beis Din, taking everything that he has, doing a misadrin, and making him make a shvua he doesn't have any money is a long and tedious process. But that's what an arev is. You have to go through that. It's only when we're dealing with something extreme, where you have to go to Medinas Hayom, you have to start traveling overseas, get the property, and that's both a tremendous tircha and a tremendous expense, that we say, ad kan, that's the equivalent of the borrower simply not having the money, you can go after the arev. What will be if it's somewhere in between, where it's just a question of hopping on a jet, it's not that expensive compared to the amount of the loan. And Chanami, the Aruch HaShulchan says, if it's a reasonable tircha and expense, then you would be mechuyev to do so. Typically, the expenses of Beis Din, the expenses of collection, are usually on the malva, unless you can make it into a garmi, where every time there's a din Torah, the parties split the expense. The winning party does not have the right to be reimbursed, typically, for the expense of the din Torah. The exception is when it's a garmi, when there's nothing to talk about. There's clearly a chayv, it's clearly owed, and just maliciously, the person refuses to pay and forces you to spend money. At that point, you can get him as a garmi. On the other hand, when there is a legitimate shakavataria, or in a case where Beis Din needs to be involved because the borrower says, I owe you the money, I have this property. But there's a process. What's the valuation of this property? How much credit do I get if you take this? That's a process that requires a Beis Din. So when the borrower says, we have to go through this process and there are expenses involved, that's not garmi, that he is entitled to his due process, and in that case, the lender will end up suffering part of that loss.
I'm not talking about Beis Din, I'm talking about
that's a good. So there is a halacha if the arif sees that the loiva is being mavaz with nechasav, he borrows money. There's a guarantor, and suddenly the fellow is jetting around the world, going to Eretz Yisrael a couple of times, buying himself, you know, a fancy car. So if he sees that the loiva is hiding or destroying his assets, he has the right to force the borrower to release him from the arvus. That being said, the same thing is true by a lender. A lender that lends money for a specific term, so the halacha is if the borrower's business deteriorates, the lender has a problem because he agreed to advance the loan for a year. Until the end of the year, he cannot collect it. On the other hand, if the borrower is being reckless or negligent with the money, as being mavaz in the chasav, there the lender has the right to say, "Adaita dahachi, I did not agree to give it to you for a year," and in that case, you can force him to pay earlier. So in both cases, both the arev or the creditor would have the right to force him to pay earlier if you see this kind of behavior. So this is, if it's Medinas Hayam, if it's far away, you do not have to do it. Yesh Lodoin, what happens if he has property, but you have to go through a foreclosure process? So arguably, you can say it's a similar concept. If the foreclosure process will take many months, and there'll be expenses involved in foreclosing, perhaps this is similar to a Medinas Hayam, where the argument is the creditor can say, I don't have to spend this kind of money to collect it, I can go after the Arev. That being said, it's mistabra today that it's not true, because Hayos today, the norm, when you have a loan and when there are problems, the norm is to collect by foreclosing on a property. That's just standard way of collecting a debt. So therefore, in contrast to Medinas Hayom, which is something unusual, something different, where the creditor can say, I didn't sign up for this, that's why I have an RA for, a foreclosure, which is the typical way to collect your money, I think it's normal business practice, and the RA probably would be able to say, do the foreclosure, come to me afterwards if there's still a balance due. Now again, even if the borrower defaults and he has no known assets, you still have to go through the process of bringing him to Beis Din, forcing him to make a shvua, whatever Beis Din will do to try to find the assets before you go after the Arev. Now if the borrower refuses to come to Beis Din, he is a loitzai yisdin, he just doesn't show up. So in that case, although he may or may not have assets, you could go after the Arev, because that's part of the arvus. The same way, if he's not around, or if he has no money, the fact that he refuses to respond to a Beis Din is the same, and you'd be able to go directly after the Arev to collect the debt. Now, obviously, this kind of arvus puts the creditor at a pretty significant disadvantage. It's a very difficult to actually go after the Arev. So the second kind of arvus, which today is much more popular, is called an Arev Koblin. But an Arev Koblin has primary responsibility for the loan. And what that means is the creditor has a choice. He can go after the borrower, he can go after the Arev. He has absolutely no responsibility to make any effort to collect the debt from the borrower. He can go directly after the Koblin, say, you are a Koblin, you have primary responsibility for the loan, pay up. He doesn't have to send a letter, he doesn't have to make a phone call, he can just tell the Arev, I'm not interested in dealing with the Loiva. I don't like him, or he's my good friend, I don't want to bother him. He doesn't really have to justify or give any reason. He can go after the Arev Koblin, who has primary responsibility for the Chayv. Now today, virtually every loan document, every Arvus, if it's drafted by someone who understands the difference, it is virtually always structured as an Arev Koblin. For these reasons, you don't want to be in a position where you have to go after the borrower and go through the whole process. You want to be able to just turn directly to the Arev and get your money as soon as there is any default. By an Arev Stam, there's clearly a loiva, and the Arev is a secondary liability. A Koblin has the same achrayas. There is a difference that if you go to the Koblin, l'mashal, and the loiva says, no, I want to pay. Now the loiva has iburis, his property is low grade. The Koblin has better assets. The halacha is, because the loiva still is the loiva, he has the right to insist, no, I want to pay, you can't go after the Koblin. So he does have a din of a loiva, at least in limited circumstances. In most halachas, we will look at them as very similar to just having two people with a chiyuv. We'll see. We'll get to the end of this year a few nafkaminos. But so clearly, there it is a din of a loiv, at least in a limited circumstance. But yeah, yes. Assuming his arbus is b'shtar. Now, it's the fact that there's a loiv, that there's a loiv is nechasim are only meshuvid if there's a milva b'shtar, which at least by the letter of the law you need two edim on the shtar. The arev as well. Even if he signs arvus, he says verbally, or he says ten loiv ani etin, he becomes a kablin, or he becomes an arev. So even though a verbal agreement is enough to become an arev, it's not enough to create a shiva nechasim, because that shiva, that obligation, is only verbal, it's not b'shtar. So you'd need the same requirements of a milva b'shtar. It is virtually unheard of today to have a real milva b'shtar. People who lend money do not have two edim signing on the shtar. They do not rely on the kol or on the chasim shubadim. They put a lien. They put a mortgage on the property, and therefore it goes with a whole different set of rules. So now that we know that you're better off being a kablin and not an arev, how do you become a kablin? What language is required to become an arev stam, and at what point to become an arev kablin? So to become an arev stam, as we spoke out, you do not need any kinyan. As long as you, before the money is advanced, you say, give him the money, I'll become an arev. Give him the money, I'll pay it back. Any language of where you give him a tzivo, you instruct the lender to advance the money, and you are maftiach him that I will pay you back, I'll become an arev. Any language like that is enough to become an arev. Now again, we mentioned that tzivo is a machlokes, whether you need that, but the basic element is where the creditor is advancing the money because of your say-so, and you're committing to pay it back. You're committing to become an arev. Once you use that language, you become an arev. However, these are all lashonos of an arev stam. If you'd like to become an arev kablin, there's a very specific requirement. The formula that's discussed in the Gemara is where the kablin tells the creditor, ten loy v'ani ete, which means give the money to that person, we'll call him the borrower, v'ani etein, and I will give it back to you. Where you tell him, give the money, in other words, give it on my say-so, and I will pay you back. Now, what that means is you cannot use a lashon of halva. If you say, lend the money to him and I will pay you back, that's an arev stam, it's not an arev kablin. Because the moment you use the word lend, there's a lashon of halva, you're saying, there's a loan here, there's a borrower here. If there's a borrower, he's the one you have to go after. I'm an arev, I'm secondary responsibility. So in the arvus, in this guarantee, you cannot use a lashon of a halva. You also cannot use a lashon of piron, of a repayment. Because repayment sounds like there's a debt, and I'm going to pay that debt. But whose debt is it? Again, that implies there's a loiva, there's a borrower that has the debt, I'm taking responsibility to pay it back. In all of those cases, even if you say, Hilveyu va'ani kablin, lend it to him and I'll be a kablin, it doesn't work. Because since you use a lashon of halva, you use a lashon of a loan means as a borrower, it means go after the borrower first. So the only way, the only language that will work, that you can go directly after the kablin and you don't have to pursue the borrower at all, is when you say, ten loy va'ani etein, give it to him, I will give it back to you. Not a language of halva, not a language of piron. What? Oh, very good. Because Lamaisi, he got the money. He did get the money, and it wasn't given as a present. There isn't a more extreme case where if you say ten loy v'ani etein, and the malva gives the money to the arev, who then gives it to the loiva, then ein achram. Then we look at it as if the kablin is a loiva directly. But in a case where the money is given directly from the malva to the borrower, although a language of ten loy v'ani etein, the kablin takes responsibility as if he got it, but that's an as if he got it. The borrower is the one that actually got it, and therefore he is mechuyev and has a din of a loiva. Now the truth is, many years ago, I had a neighbor of mine had a gemach. It was actually a rather large gemach, and when I started learning chayishnish, but I just was curiosity. I asked to see what kind of documents do you use when you have someone signing as an arev on the gemach. So he pulls out of his pocket a business card, and the business card on top of it had the name of the gemach. And there was a blank line where you filled in your name, and it said, ten loy v'ani etein. That was the entire shtar. He had, at that point, he had lent, it was a few million dollars, had been lent on the basis of that shtar, and he told me he had never had a default. No one had ever given it. I mean, he had a hard time every once in a while. But at the end of the day, he was always able to recover. He always got his money back. Now, I told him it's a beautiful and inspiring story that out of a little temloi v'ani etain on a business card, you can lend out over $1 million in Lakewood and get every penny back. Certainly, mikam cho Yisrael. But that being said, don't be a fool and get yourself a real shtar. Because I mean, it's a nice story, but it's just not advisable, especially when you're dealing with mammon of the tzibur, mammon of tzedakah. But the halacha, that's all you need. Ten loy v'ani etein. If you use that language, the arev now has primary responsibility. You don't have to bother.
I'm sorry. So what was the sufficiency in what they were doing?
Okay, we'll get to it. Although you're a cobbler, it's certainly enough to become a cobbler, and that is a perfect formula to become a cobbler. However, even a cobbler, we're going to see, it's not always so easy to collect from. There are all sorts of pitfalls you have, and we'll go through some of them in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay. You cannot. If you use a lashon of havo, that implies primary responsibility. But an arev, for example, the arev when he pays back, obviously the understanding is he's going to go after the loiva and get that money from him. He's not just saying give that person a present and I'm going to give you a present in exchange. It's advance the funds to him and I'm responsible to give those funds back to you. But it's not a matana. It's done in the context of a loan. It's also done in the context of the borrower coming to the Arev and saying, I need to borrow money from this person. Can you take responsibility? So while the language used has to avoid the language of loans and responsibility so that you don't bump yourself down to an Arev stam, but certainly everyone understands the intent is not to be a present. The intent is for the borrower to pay it back. He is a borrower, and he has the regular chiyuvim of a loan. Typically, there was a shtar halva. The arev doesn't need a shtar at all. It can be verbal. There's sometimes it was added in either after the signatures or before the signatures. Yeah.
Is there a shtar halva
between the borrower and the creditor? We're not focused on. We're focused on what language between the arev and the creditor. So although even by an arev kablin, the relationship between the lender and the borrower is just that, as a halva, a lender and a borrower. The question is between the Arev's discussion or his chayvus to the lender, does he say, lend the money to him and I'll be an Arev, or does he just say, ten loy v'ani etein? So 100%. The fact that there's a separate document that refers to it as a loan is not a contradiction to an Arev being an Arev kavlan. Now, typically today, if you look at a guarantee document, the documents certainly do not conform with halacha. When you guarantee, it begins with whereas, you know, the borrower wants to borrow money from this and this person, whereas the arev has some sort of vested interest, whereas he doesn't want to advance money without his say-so, and it spells things out very literally. And certainly, I've never seen a legal document that simply said, ten loy v'ani etein. So in a technical sense, l'chayra, any time you sign a guarantee, the arev should be able to say, I'm an arev stam. I did not say ten loy v'ani etein, and therefore go after the borrower first, and only after he has no money left, there's a total default. You bring him to bez, he makes a shvuah. Only then, and only then, can you go after me. Now, although this might be true in theory, but halacha l'maaseh, this is not true for two basic reasons. The first is that we're discussing here hilchos arvos. Arvos, as we pointed out, is this tremendous chiddush. That simply by saying the words ten loy v'ani etein, or give him the money, I'll be an arev. You don't need a kinyan, you don't need anything, any shtar. You automatically become responsible for this money. You have to pay it back. In hilchos arvos, when you want to become chayev without a shtar, without a kinyan, simply because you said these words, because he lent money because of your word, so there are rules to follow. There's an arev stam, there's an arev kablin, and we have to look at exactly what language was used. On the other hand, if you're not relying on hilchos arvos, a person can create a shtar and say, I owe you money, for no reason. You can create a chayiv. This is Shitas Rambam. You can be a chayiv yourself, money with a shtar, with a kinyan, without a problem. You can have two people. You can have the arev. If he writes a shtar that very explicitly spells out all of his obligations, you lend money, and I'm nischayev to pay you back. You can come after me even without going after the other person, and you can create all the terms that you want. If your shtar is a good shtar, your contract is a good contract, there's an appropriate kinyan that's done, forget about hilchos arvus. Whatever obligations you accepted, you're liable for because you accepted those obligations with a kinyan. So therefore today, when you spell out very specifically the obligations, if anyone has ever seen a guarantee that's done in a commercial setting, they are very, very explicit. It says exactly what your obligations are. You're usually signing your life away. And it's very explicit. So, what? Okay, very good, very good. A kablin, many shittos hold, do not have a problem with an asmachta. An arev stam, which is a conditional liability, if there's a default, then it kicks in, that's an asmachta. A kablin, which the moment the money is advanced, it's owed, many shittos say, that's not an asmachta at all. Now, there are those that argue, but even then, if it's done with an appropriate kinyan, you're right, that would probably need a bezin chashuv, or you'll have to come on to minog or dinah malchus dinah. But if it's done with an appropriate kinyan, you can avoid the asmachta problem as well.
But aren't you saying in today's documents, he's not really a kabbalah, but he is being a kabbalah everything?
Exactly. In other words, that's my point. Forget about hilchos arvus. Hilchos arvus is when you say, give him the money, I'm an arev. So we have to figure out, you're an arev, you're a kabbalah, what are the rules of an arev? But forget about Arvus. Let's say I'm not an Arif. I'm accepting upon myself the following 10 obligations, and I sign a shtar. So it's like any deal that we sign in the shtar. I'm bound to these obligations. So therefore today, when the documents are very explicit, exactly what your obligations are and under what conditions they kick in, as long as the shtar qualifies as a shtar kinyan, situmta, however you're going to use, then you're going to have those responsibilities, nothing to do with hilchos arvus, but simply because you accepted them and they're explicit in the shtar. The second point, and this is the Marsham makes this point, is that even when the language is defective, or if language is vague, where al pi halacha you would have the din of an arev stam, he says we are a derish lashon hedyot, we do follow the minhag. And if today, there's a specific language in English or any other language where everyone understands this to mean, when I accept this responsibility, I am the equivalent of an Arev Kablin. So whether or not it translates well, or whether or not it meets the specific criteria, if it's common enough, it's widespread enough, it will create a minhag, it'll create a situmta, and you'll be responsible as well. So in these cases, even if you don't specify all the terms, you just use a language which everyone understands it to mean the equivalent of an Arev Kablin, therefore it's likely to be chayev anyway because of this concept of minhag. No, this is just a question of minhag, that if you use a language that everyone understands to mean the equivalent of a kablin, so the minhag will force us to interpret it as a kablin, regardless of whether it meets the specific criteria. But you have to be careful. Whenever you're relying on minhag, it has to be very widespread and very clear. Simply because you're going to say maybe this, that, if it's not completely clear that we mean kablin, if it's something which doesn't happen that often, or people use this language, but there's no nafgamina in most cases, whether you're an arev or a kablin, then this will not work. So you can only rely on this when you're very confident that such a minhag exists.
Right, but the Max, usually they try to go to the person first, they don't take it to force a shvula,
Correct. Now today, even if you go to Bezdin generally does not force a shvua. So based on this marsham, they will say that although technically you require a shvua, that's not what's done today. You'll have to do, an Arev Stam would only have to do what Bate Din today do to try to collect debt. But once they've hit that point, and they still cannot find any assets, they're not able to collect anything, at that point, even an Arev Stam, they would allow to go after the Arev. So they're not going to make you do more than is typically done by a Bezdin today. The question is whether you have to go through the process or once as a default you go right after the Arif. So this is a discussion of how to become the language required to be an Arif versus being an Arif Kaaba. The next question we have to deal with is what happens when there is a default and Arif Stam or Arif Kaaba, you're now going after the Arif. Under what conditions the Arev have to pay off this debt? So there are a number of points that need to be made. The first is, according to many poskim, an Arev is given 30 days to pay the debt. Stam halva shloishim yoim. Certainly by an arif stam, where his obligation only kicks in once there's a default and once you go after him. So once he's told and notified that you're on the hook, he now would have at least 30 days in order to pay off the debt. No, not at all. Not at all. The loiva still has responsibility to the creditor. The arev becomes liable simply because he is an arev. That arev means that when the loiva cannot pay back, he has to make that payment. So to the extent the loiva can't pay back, the arev will have to pay. But certainly it doesn't release the loiva from his obligations. And once the arev pays, the loiva will have... So the first point is the arev is given 30 days. But the next issue, and this is a very much more significant issue, is when the creditor goes after the arev and says, the borrower never paid, I'm coming to you for payment. Can the arev say, how do I know that this debt wasn't paid? Prove it. What kind of proof does the malva have to bring to show that the loiva never paid? So here the halacha is, if it's a milva balpe, if you lent the money, there's no the malva does not have a shtar, he does not. It was just done by trust. The halacha is, the arif can always say, prove that it wasn't paid. How do I know? You have no shtar. You're not coming with any evidence that it wasn't paid. And therefore, the burden of proof is on the malva. Now, if the loiva is there, and he comes to Bezin and is moida, I never paid it, the debt is still outstanding. At that point, the arev has to pay. He may be able to, he could force the loiva to make a shvua that he's not making a kanunya, that he's not ganging up with the lender to collect shalokidin. But that's what being an arev means, that if the borrower admits responsibility, the arev will have to pay. However, if the loiva died, he's not around anymore, so the arev has no idea whether this debt is still outstanding or not. If there's no shtar, you will not be able to collect from him. Because the arev will always say, how do I know whether or not this is paid? So it will depend actually when the loiva died. If it was a 3-year loan, and the loiva died before the expiration before it was due, so then there's a chazaka in Eldon Perea B'Toyuch Zmanoi. People don't pay debts, halavai they pay debts on time. They certainly don't pay debts early before they're actually due. So in that case, you do not have to bring any raya. The very fact that we know it was borrowed and it's not due yet, that there's a chazaka that tells us it's still payable and you can collect from the arev. However, once you're past the due date, if it's a milva balpeh by an arev stam, you will never be able to collect unless the borrower is here and admits that the debt is still outstanding. Now this is by an arev stam. By an arev kablin, there's a fascinating machlokes. And when an arev kablin, the Ramah paskins, you can go after the arev even though we don't know or we have no raya one way or another whether the debt was paid. Why? Because, like this. Exactly. Even by milva peh. Why? Because like this, when there was milvav, the halacha is like this. What happens normally, if someone comes over to you and says, you borrowed $10,000 from me, and you say, you know what, I'm not sure, I don't remember if I borrowed the money. What's the halacha? The halacha is, ha-moitzim mechavei avaraya, any day im nischayafti, if you don't know whether you ever owe the money, you don't have to pay. On the other hand, what happens if someone says, you borrowed $10,000 from me, and the borrower says, you know what, you're right, I know I borrowed the money, but I don't remember. I may have paid you off. I'm not sure. And the lender says nothing doing. I know for sure you didn't pay me. So the halacha is over here, we do not say amaytze mechavei avaraya. Here we say it's any din paratich. Since you admit, everyone agrees that yesterday or last month you owed the money. There's a cheskas chiyuv. You definitely owe the money. You're saying maybe I have a safek. Maybe it was paid. Maybe yes. Maybe no. Since there's a vada chiyuv, a cheskas chiyuv, there's a vada chiyuv, a safek piron, the halacha is, when it's a bari v'shema, the halacha is, you have to pay, and the loiva will have to pay misafek. Zog the chacham shlomo. How do we deal with this by an arif? When you go to an arif stam and say, I believe, the malva says, this debt was never paid. The Aryeh says, I don't know, maybe it was paid. Is that any idea in Mischayafti or any idea in Paratich? Okay, if he denies there was ever a loan in Echanami. But here the case is there's no question about the loan. He was there. He ten loy vani ete, nor ten loy vani Aryeh. And now there's a question of the payment. So by an Aryeh stam, when does an Aryeh stam become chayev? Only when the money is owed and there's a default. In a case over here where the Aryeh is saying maybe it was paid, that means he's saying there was never a default. I never became liable. That's the equivalent of saying I perhaps never borrowed the money, and therefore the Aryeh is off the hook, even when he has no idea. But since we don't know whether the chiv ever kicked in, maybe it did, or maybe it was paid beforehand, so it's a suffix whether you ever came chayiv, a suffix of any day in Nischayavti, the halacha is potter. That, what? No, we don't look at probability. We look at if it's a suffix whether you ever became chayiv, the rule is a maitzim mechavel v'raya. When there are boris and shemas and shema grua, that will make a difference primarily for lotzei sidei shemayim. So that's all true by an Aryeh. By a koblin, what did we say before? A koblin has primary responsibility. That means when does his chiyuv kick in? The moment the money was lent. Sometimes this chiyuv will be paid because the koblin will take money out of his pocket. Sometimes the leva will take money out of his pocket. But there was a cheskes chiyuv the moment the money was advanced. Therefore, the way the Chacham Shlomo explains, some shittos hold, that by an Aryeh koblin, even if he has no idea whether it was paid or not, and the Malv is saying it wasn't paid, but doesn't have a shred of evidence. But the Malv says, listen, you became an Aryeh Koblin. That means you are responsible for this money. You're saying maybe it was paid? That's any day in Paratich. Any day in Paratich doesn't help by a cheskes chiyuv when I'm a bari, and you're only a shemel. So even though you're actually a shemel toy because he has no way of knowing, nevertheless, according to some poskim, by an Aryeh Koblin, you can collect even if the malva doesn't have any proof that the money is owed. Now, this obviously puts the koblin in great peril because it means that a malva can go ahead, collect money from the borrower, and then go ahead and collect again from the koblin. And the koblin won't know what happened. He'll be forced to pay. So to protect himself, he would have to give himself nemanos, where he'd have to write specifically in the shtar that he is neman, or the malva has to prove that the choyv existed. Now, in halacha l'maisa, this is a machloikis, even by an order of koblin. And l'maisa, the shach paskins, you cannot be moitzimam without a raya. Hayois, by definition, the koblin is going to be a muchzik. It's going to be very hard to be mechayev him in this case where there's no clear raya. But it is a machlokes, and now that we go with the shach, we really have a problem the other way. Whenever you're going after the koblin, if you have a shtar, if you have a milvah b'shtar, then you're pretty good. Because you show the shtar to the Aryeh Koblin, the shtar proves the debt is still outstanding, and you'll be able to be goyva. At most, you'll need a shvuah. You'll be able to goyva with the shtar. By milva al peh, having a Aryeh Koblin is of limited use. Because by definition, you'll never be able to prove the money is still outstanding unless the borrower comes and makes a shvuah. And if the borrower comes and makes a shvuah, but for that matter, you may as well just have an Aryeh Stam. You now need him in the process. You need him cooperating. So that is one of the many reasons when people have a shtar of arvus, they usually very explicitly say that the malva has nemonus. The koblin agrees that if the malva says it wasn't paid, he has to pay. He can't be mechayev a shvuah, he can't be mechayev a cherim. He basically signs his life away, and that way the creditor has the ability to collect from the koblin unless there's a receipt. And someone who has who is borrowing money with a koblin, if you're going to repay the choyv, you'd better make sure that you get a signed receipt. And the second thing is you'd better tell the koblin or tell the arev that you've paid the choyv. Because the halacha is, if you borrow money with a shtar and you pay it, but the malva says, you know, I can't find the shtar, I'm just going to give you a receipt. He gives you the receipt, and you don't bother informing the arev that it's paid. The halacha is, in that case, the Aryeh is sitting there one day. The malva comes to him and shows him a shtar. The money is still outstanding. The Aryeh pays. And now he goes after the borrower and says, listen, I paid off your debt. The borrower says, what do you mean? I paid it already. Here's a receipt. Very nice you paid it. But if you didn't tell the Aryeh that you paid it, you didn't show him the receipt, What's he supposed to do? He saw the shtar, he was mechuyev al pi din to pay it, so in that case, certainly when the borrower is negligent, what? That's true. The question is, the malva is obviously a crook. He just collected the debt twice. Do you have to chase the malva? Or can the ariv tell the loiva, I paid money on your behalf. I want your reimbursement. So if the loiva pays and doesn't take the shtar and doesn't show him about the shaver, so he's pesheya, he's negligent. In that case, it is very likely he will have to pay a second time.
Why does the
malva
have to go and give
it? He does. If a malva that collected the money twice certainly is a ganav, and certainly if you can be moitzi it from him. The question is whether the arev has to go chase after the malva, who's someone who he doesn't have a relationship with, or he can turn to the loiva and say, listen, I don't want to deal with. I was your arev, I had to pay because of you, I want reimbursement. So there we're going to look at whether there was negligence involved on the borrower's side by not notifying the cobbler.